You need to give them a roadmap to follow. Your team wants to do well. You know, they really do. And if somebody's capable and it is the right fit, they're going to be able to thrive. And there are a lot of ways to make the training easier, you know, especially if it's, you know, a few positions that are the same. I mean, video it the first time so you don't have to keep doing it over and over. Have them follow you around. You know, it's not like you're constantly having meetings.
Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. If you would like to listen in on thought-provoking conversations with countercultural thought leaders and experts in the fields of wealth, health, and relationships, the three keys to having what I call a wealthy, wealthy life, then this is the show for you. I'm Christina Wise, real estate investor, best-selling author of Falling for Money, and founder of Wealthy, Wealthy, where I serve as your personal guide to money, health, and happiness. Welcome back to Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise. In this episode, I talk with Allison Maslin. And Allison is CEO of Maslin International, a business mentoring company. She's the number one bestselling author of Blast Off, and she's just released her second book called Scale. She is a true entrepreneur and business owner, having built 10 successful businesses from the ground up, many of which were built as a single mom. Some of her clients are Ben & Jerry's, Supercuts, and Allstate. Her specialty is scale. She works with business owners, entrepreneurs, that feel like they're stuck. They've hit a ceiling, they've hit a wall, and they can't break through that to that next area of income or growth. So if you're an inspiring entrepreneur, business owner, you feel stuck, you want some help, you need a few tips to break through from where you are now to that next place of exponential growth, you'll want to listen to this episode. Allison's amazing. She's a huge success story. Her business and career are very inspiring, and I can't wait for you to listen to what she has to say. Enjoy. Allison, thank you for being here with me today. This is really fun. So I'm actually in San Diego right now. I'm at an Airbnb. So if you're, this is where I am behind me, and you're in San Diego. So it's funny to be actually doing this call when we're, I don't know, maybe a couple miles from each other.
I know. I wish we could have gotten together face to face, but this is the next best thing. We're happy to have you in.
Yay. Well, thank you. And it's such beautiful weather here, although it's been a little bit rainy. So that was a little, you know, not used to rainy weather in San Diego.
No, we do rain dances all the time. So any drops that we can get, we're happy about.
I grew up in Arizona, so it's very much the same. All right. Well, today, for everybody listening, I want to introduce you to Allison Maslin. And we met each other, JJ Virgin's Unicorn, the seven-figure entrepreneurial women's mastermind, whatever we call that thing. But yeah. And you did a presentation, and I was like, holy cow, girl, that is just such good information. I need to make sure that my audience listens to what you have to say. And it's what I love about your work is it's different. I mean, it's outside of the scope of what we hear on a day-to-day basis about business and growth and entrepreneurship. And so I know you're going to leave us with lots of nuggets, but to get us started, just let everybody listen in and get to know who you are. Tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you. You know, I often say that I came out of the womb as a business owner. Because I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. My father built one of the largest chains of women's clothing stores in the United States starting in 1955. And so it was just, you know, that was the talk always, was business. And if I was going to communicate with my dad, that was the language that he spoke. And so at 19, I started my first company, which evolved into a full service advertising and PR firm by the time I was 25. And then I kind of crashed and burned with that business, which happy to share about that. And then I went on to build 9 more companies. So 35 years in business, lots of ups and downs, and really through that wisdom of experience and, of course, having amazing mentors, I've really learned to scale companies well. And now, for the last 10 years, my team and I have been mentoring CEOs, founders all over the world to scale their companies.
So when we say the world, and that's your specialty, and I can't wait, at the end, we'll talk about your new book that's about scaling. But so when people come to you about scale,
What do you mean by that? I mean, obviously scale can mean growth, but scale can mean different things to different people. So you're talking scale like rapid growth, exponential growth, you know, hockey stick growth, or can scale mean different things, like maybe a slower growth, or meaning something like I've hit a wall or I feel stuck and I just can't break through where I am right now?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misinterpretations of the word. It's kind of like in the health world, because I was a homeopathic physician for years, and the word holistic, people didn't really, you know, there's a lot of different definitions, right? So scale really is about multiplying. It's like duplicating you and multiplying your revenue stream, where you get to a level in your business and the type of model that you create can be replicated very easily without a lot of extra cost. And so, you know, first it's, you know, you're in startup phase and then growth phase and then scale phase. But some models don't replicate. You know, if you're the provider, you know, it's very hard to clone you. So you've got to obviously scale a team. And there are different ways to create revenue streams that can easily multiply and duplicate as well. So I think it's wise to think about these things in the beginning as you're, you know, as you're starting your business, because otherwise you literally need to rebuild it once you get to that level and hit the wall.
So, and where do you see in all of your work, your 35 years of work when it comes to business growth and scalability, do you find that there are certain places where people get stuck? So they reach one level and then they get stuck, they maybe break through, then there's another level where you can define these places? That's, you know, there is such a place.
Yeah. And there are five phases, and that's, you know, what you saw me share that business owners go through when they're scaling their company. And I'm happy to go through those with you. But to preface that, I'll say, you know, on a revenue side, you know, there are people that don't really ever get into the six-figure level. And that's generally because of a money mindset. I see that really holds them back. They're not charging enough money. They're not really focused on sales, which you and I both know that that's crucial in business. And then, you know, if you're in six figures, and you're the provider, you're probably going to get somewhere to $350,000, $450,000 because there's only so many hours in the day. And that's where I find people hit a wall. And, you know, it's not that that's not a lot of money. It is a lot of money. But, you know, just because your revenue is that high doesn't mean your profit is that high. Then that, you know, once you kind of break that and you start building a team, a lot of people hit that seven-figure wall. Even the $3 to $5 million wall, because, you know, maybe you had a great product and it really took off and you have this, we call it low hanging fruit, and you get referrals and you've kind of built it that way, but you don't really know how to market your company. You generally will get stuck there. So, it's creating a model that can duplicate and replicate. And, you know, scaling a team and having a revenue stream that can, you know, just instead of being linear, it really kind of has this fan feather model that just goes out in several directions and up at the same time.
So if I heard you correctly, you see a lot of people just, they hit a six-figure wall or ceiling where no matter what they do, they just maybe can't break that seven-figure mark. They're getting stuck maybe at the $500,000 revenue mark, which I see a lot of business owners do, that they really do get stuck there, kind of right underneath their plateau, 350 to 500, and just cannot, no matter how hard they try or what they do or how much money they spend, they can't break through. And what you're saying, a lot of that has to do with maybe not being, you haven't built the team yet. It's really a team at this level that will help you break through that ceiling. Maybe the business is too dependent on you individually. Is that correct?
Definitely. And it's kind of like the chicken before the egg thing, where people feel like, well, that sounds great. You know, Allison, I'd love to build a team, but I need the cash first. And it's actually the opposite. You know, when I started out, you know, I started hiring people. I had no money. I mean, literally using my credit cards. And, but if you're super passionate about what you're doing and you can get people on board with your vision and you're able to say, look, hang with me for 30 days, 60 days, let's get this going. And I know that, together we're going to be able to bring in business. And let's start you at this lower level and then we'll build up. Or you start with part-time help or interns, you know, but people wait way too long till they start growing a team, because once you invest and once you start to build, it's like a stair step. It's like, okay, I invest. So this stair is I'm investing, I'm getting an employee, and then your business grows like three steps. And then I get another one and then the business grows another three steps. And you want to hire correctly, which I talk about in my new book, but, that's, you know, where a lot of people are, they get in their own way. They're afraid to delegate. What if they're going to make a mistake? You know, you're not doing it right. And they just hold on so tight that they're truly choking their own growth.
Oh, that's well said. And I love that stair step up. You know, you invest one and you get three more steps. So that's a really powerful image. And it's so true. I remember at the beginning when I started businesses that I just needed so much control. And it was really organized around fear and mistakes and what ifs. And then, but just how liberating it is when I actually start building teams, people that's smarter than I am and better than I am and better ideas. And even if they did it differently or maybe not as well in some categories, it gave me the space to do other things. And then I finally realized, like, oh my gosh, having a team is so much better than trying to do this on my own. I mean, I'll take, even if assuming somebody did 75% of what I could do, but usually they did it better than I did anyway, once, you know, after all. But I just thought I would rather have that and have my time to create, invent, build new relationships, do the networking, do maybe collaboration and different things. And just having that space made all the difference in the world, that now I can't even imagine trying to do things on my own.
Oh, yes. I mean, it is so freeing because your time is your value. What, especially as you get into that higher six figures, you know, your money can come and go, but your time cannot. And how you spend your time is what's going to move the needle. And, you know, you obviously need to make sure people are trained. They see people hire and they don't train and then they get frustrated with their team. They're not mind readers. They need to know what they need to do. But once they do, then you really need to step back and, you know, show them that you trust them. And that's key. And that is the hardest thing, you know, because we tend to be control freaks with something that we're so passionate about. We worked so hard with, and it's our baby, to let it go. It is a scary thing. But if you don't do that, your team will never step up and they'll never take ownership. They won't have the confidence to do it. And they'll always feel like they're disappointing you. And it becomes this push-pull kind of thing, you know? So
yeah. And you make a good point as well. Then the second piece, it's okay. You hire someone full-time, part-time, contract, employee, it doesn't matter, whatever's the best choice in the moment. But then it's jump on them and expect them to go figure it out versus thinking, like you said, it's an investment. Yes, you have to invest more time up front so that you can get your time back on the back end. But there is that investment, and to train and to maybe create some SOPs or some different things that make it easy for your new team member to succeed, right?
Yes. I mean, you need to give them a roadmap to follow. Your team wants to do well. You know, they really do. And if somebody's capable and it is the right fit, they're going to be able to thrive. And there are a lot of ways to make the training easier, you know, especially if it's, you know, a few positions that are the same. I mean, video it the first time so you don't have to keep doing it over and over. Have them follow you around. You know, it's not like you're constantly having meetings. You know, have them sit in on meetings. Like, I just hired a content coordinator. I'm so excited to fill this position. And she started just a couple days ago, and we have a big event this weekend. So I just said, be a fly on the wall. Just follow us around, follow, and just, you know, take it all in. And so really once they get it and they see what's expected of them, then instead of giving them the answers all the time, I mean, in the beginning you need to, but there's a point where you don't want to spoon feed anymore. You need to say, well, how would you do it? Or why don't you figure that out and then come back and present it to me? And it's like our children, you know, if we're constantly jumping in and rescuing them and giving them the answers, what happens? They don't thrive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's well said. All right. So I have a couple questions for you. And in my past life, like you, just a serial entrepreneur, I've had many businesses and some have done very well and had exits. Others have, you know, just kind of dwindled and died but they've all been these great experiences. But I love business. I love startups. I love creating something from nothing. I love building teams. I love building brands and cultures. And so, you know, I love that about you. So I get that. I've done it many times. I'm wondering with where you are in your business, if you have any advice about this, is that in the old days, sound like I'm really old, but you know, I built teams locally. So I was able to manage the teams, lead the teams, motivate the teams, inspire the teams. They could be a fly on the wall. And, you know, I just spent a lot of time because we were all in the same office building together and I could build the culture. And you know, a lot of that just came from my attitude every day and my, you know, flying in and out and whizzing. And so, but now that I have a different type of business, which is what I call, or I think what's been coined more of a lifestyle business, means I'm on the road a lot. I'm out of Austin as much as I'm in Austin, and I'm working and I have a lot of remote help. I have an incredible team, but everybody's across the country, different parts. So we're managing time zones, we're managing different schedules. They have more than, you know, these are contractors, even though they're fully invested in the brand. They have one or two other gigs that they may be working on as well. So any advice in this new age of remote help? I found it more difficult to manage, motivate, inspire, train, hold accountable these different aspects of team building and really successful teams when we're all in different locations. So do you have any advice there?
Yes. And that's, I'm glad you brought that up because so many companies are running that way. And we definitely have some virtual employees. I had some team members that worked with us and then moved away and I love them so much. They had so much value. So we've kept them on full time. And, you know, sometimes you find experts and, you know, they're not in your local area, even if you are there and you're not, you know, traveling around. I love the lifestyle business. You've got kind of a nomad business, which is very cool. And so the key is, though, you have to be super clear on your big picture vision of your company. And in my book, Scale or Fail, the acronym for SCALE is Strategic Vision, Cash Flow, Alliance of the Team, Leadership, and Execution. So the very first, the S is strategic vision. That's where it all begins. And even though you have a virtual team, everybody needs to be a part of the vision. That's the glue that holds you all together. It's what creates the inspiration and the excitement. And so we do weekly meetings and we have an admin meeting, we have a marketing meeting, we have a, you know, I run a coaching company, so we have a coaches meeting that we've been doing for years. And so, you know, some people are in the office, the rest are virtual. So we'll have it on Zoom, you know, like this, or, you know, on a conference line, and we're all on together. And we talk about the vision of the company. We always start the call with that. And my role as the leader, I get everyone excited about what we're doing. Or if I'm not even on the call, which is a lot these days, is I have point people that are running those meetings and it's their role to get, you know, to raise up the energy of the group and remind them our why. What is it that our drive is? What's the impact about? And to remind everybody on your team, whether they're local or in Timbuktu, that they are a crucial, integral part of that vision. And I even say to team, look, I couldn't do this without you. And knowing this, how can you best contribute? Knowing that how important you are, and this is where we're headed, how can you best contribute to us reaching together to making this big picture vision a reality? And that's the shift where people get out of this 9-to-5 mentality or even freelance mentality and feel like they're part of your team, even if they are in another city or are part-time.
You know, that's a really good point, Ashley, because listening to you say that, as obvious as it sounds, what I found when working with remote, with more freelance contract help, let's say in a way, even though they're great team members and they're very committed to the brand and to the work and to the fulfillment, to the deliverables, hearing you say that, I realized, oh, you know what? We're working more tactically, like on project basis or this exact deliverable and working on these and getting them complete. And so it's great in the sense that we're fulfilling on a certain project or a certain deliverable or outcome or asset or whatever the case is. And everybody can have a really great attitude about that, but it's not connected to the bigger why. And I think you're right, that maybe that's the missing piece, is that even if they work on another one or two gigs, if it's all tactical, it's just they're doing good work as opposed to being inspired by, hey, this project is part of a bigger vision, which when I had local teams, that was just very obvious. We had the big visions on the wall and the big ambitions and what we're working towards and kind of the big why at the end. Versus, yeah, remotely, that's not as obvious. It's implied in a way, but I probably haven't made it so explicit that they know why these projects are so important and these timelines are so important.
Yeah. And you know what? The tactile is important, right? It's the E in scale is execution. So you've got to get stuff done, no question. But, you know, even when teams are local, they tend to just go over this vision once a year at an annual meeting, when it really needs to be part of every single day. And even, you know, we have this document that we've created, and I talk about how to do this in my book, Scale or Fail. And we share it with all of our clients. So every event we do, we share our vision. We give it to our vendors. And we just keep putting this vision out there. Every time I'm doing an interview, you know, so we're able to look, do you even match this vision? Is this something that you connect with? Because if not, then this isn't a right fit. And so it becomes part of your execution and your everyday part of running your business. I find that people are often, or a CEO will go, oh yeah, I'll get to that vision thing. I got a stack of papers on my desk. It's like in a drawer somewhere crumpled up, you know? And that's the whole, honestly, if there's a team problem, it's a vision problem. If it's a marketing problem, it's a vision problem. That's how important that is.
That really is so good. So thank you for that. That's given me a lot to think about, actually. So when we get off this call, I've got some work to do. All right. So S is for strategic vision. C is for?
Cash flow.
Okay. I love that word, cash flow. So been in the money business, it's all about cash flow. And one of my first business lessons actually was learning about cash flow. That was the big lesson, in that I had my business, which was an internet business right before the tech crash back in like 2000. But I had all these pre-sales and my product was number one in market. But part of what we did was that to get the subscriptions, we gave 3 months upfront free and then, you know, you'd be on subscription after that. And I got all these sales and I was cha-ching, cha-ching, calculating the numbers and thinking, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing so well. But I didn't know about cash flow, that, oh, I still have all this outflow of money, cash outflow with all my programmers and all my team. And the burn rate was pretty high, but I wasn't bringing any cash in. So sales didn't equal cash flow. And that was a big lesson. That company, I mean, it went under, there was the cash flow issues and learning that lesson combined with being hit with the tech crash. But that was my big lesson. Oh, cash flow matters. And it's not just about sales. It's sales/cash flow and receivables and payables.
You know, you have to invest in yourself. You have to invest in your business. And this is another thing that holds people back, right? So it's like they want zero debt, which is impossible in a business. We're always, you know, we have overhead and our sales come in, it goes down. It's this constant, you know, swing. But yeah, you need to really have a grasp on how much needs to go out every month and what you need to bring in. And the, if your focus is on cash every day, meaning that you know, okay, we need to bring in another million this year, or 500,000 or 10 million, wherever, whatever level that you're at, what does that mean on a daily basis? Like if you reverse engineer that, how many sales do you need to make every day at what price point? And so not only you know, but the whole team knows. Everybody should be focused on sales in one way or another. They're all there to move that vision forward. And so instead of, you know, freaking out like, oh, I got to get more loans and more investors and things like that, which, you know, I'm not saying those are bad things. It's just that if you're bringing cash in regularly, you have your, you know, you're focused on sales constantly, then, you know, once you make that sale, you don't have to pay an investor back. You don't have to pay a loan back, right? You have a customer.
Yeah. And it's to understand, to know what is the burn rate, how much money is going out on a weekly or daily or monthly basis. And then what do we have to bring in to cover that? And what's the plan? What's the sales strategy for at least matching the burn rate until, you know, on a month-to-month basis, and then whatever margin over that. But absolutely. And so let's talk about that. Let's break that down. And that in working with many different startups and aspiring entrepreneurs and those, you know, really getting their business off the ground, many times they have really incredible products or services, but they're afraid of this word called sales. Like they're really afraid to go out there and pitch their product or make the phone calls, pick up the phone. So what do you have to say about that? I imagine that's a big part of the ceiling of being able to break through, is that fear of sales or that dislike or distaste of that word called sales.
Yeah, I mean, whatever their belief is around sales or what they heard growing up, or maybe they had a bad experience, we tend to bring that into our reality. And sales is really sharing. And that's the thing that you have to grasp. I mean, you know, you've heard before, if you have this amazing product or service, and there are people out there that need it, why wouldn't you want to get it into their hands? Because there are people laying around at night, middle of the night, going, oh my God, you know, where is this thing? Or where is that person? And you're not sharing it. And I think a lot of people get stuck because they're afraid of rejection, or they're afraid of being too pushy, while somebody else comes in and scoops up the sale. And you're sitting there struggling with this great product or service that could help people, and it's just sitting there dormant. So it's learning to how to have the sales conversation. And there are all kinds of strategies around that. But, you know, for me, I've always been really good at sales. And especially in my early days, I had zero training. But the key was this. I was so passionate about what I was doing. And I still am. And I get so excited about it. I'm like, you need to do this. Like, why wouldn't you do it? Let's do it. Come on. Let me help you, or let's do this together. And so it doesn't become this sort of strategy. It's just, hey, you know, I care about this. I care about you. And I know this would help you. And it, this applies to every single business, whether it's beauty salons or tires.
It's so true. And sales, there's what I found about sales is it's very rewarding, because when you know that you were able to bring on a new client, meaning you sold yourself, you sold the product, we were able to bring forth the value and why it's important to them, what's in it for them, and then they're excited to become a new customer and client. It's so rewarding. I mean, I don't even know if there's anything more rewarding than having that one-on-one, or that, you know, just that big sale. Because it's a win-win in the sense that the customer is getting your product or service. It's your passion, your life's work. It's better than anything else out there. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it. And And then, you know, what we're getting, we get a new customer, we get cash flow in, and that's the exchange. That's the transaction. And ultimately, that's what business is. Business is the exchange of transactions. My product or service for your money and your money for my, you know, maybe your product or service for my money. And that's the whole game of business. And if we're not in that game, then why are we in the business anyway? It's just making a product or service and nobody buying it, then that's just a waste. And so anyway, it's a real
give and receive.
And it's so much fun. I mean, it's just such great energy.
It's energy. And that's really what it is. You know, it is, you know, you're outputting energy and sharing your wisdom or whatever the widget is. And then you're receiving that energy back. It's like currency, which is money. It's like an electrical current. Now, if you're putting out, though, and you're not receiving back at the level that you put out, that's generally when you get burned out. Mm. Or a lot of business, so you're not charging enough for, you know, the value that you're offering or the impact that you're making.
Yeah, well said. All right, so S for strategic vision, C for cash flow, and A.
A is alliance of the team. And so that's hiring, that's, you know, hiring in alignment with your big picture vision, that's company culture, and that's co-creating and building a team that, you know, begins to take ownership of the company, really. They're like intrapreneurs, you know, they have their own business within your business in a sense. And so this, and then you, you know, you start to put systems together in this, phase of the business as well. And, you know, you really build this family around what you're doing. So you have to learn to delegate so that you can step back and be, you know, working on the business, working on strategy, building relationships like you and I have done. And you know, that can help grow a business exponential. But if you are not building a team or you're holding on too tightly, then you're going to really feel pretty miserable. And so is everybody else in your company.
Yeah, that's so well said as well. And what I found for me, I'm curious if this is the same for you. In that, again, there, I mean, obviously there's the beginning stages of the company because it's your idea. It's coming out of your head, out of your body, your life's work. So when, as business owners and entrepreneurs, then that's what we do. We create something from nothing. There wasn't a product before and now there's this great product. There wasn't this business before and now there's this business. And so the beginning stages of that, there's a lot of creation, creativity, the hard work of the business owner, entrepreneur themselves as the creator. And then it gets to a certain point there where what I found is that then as a business owner, the biggest value is no longer in that creative process, at least not until that creative process really is sprung and gets off the ground until the next creation comes. Then the best value for the business owner is the relationship piece. That's where the next amount of business is coming from. So as we build a team, if the team can manage the day-to-day, some of the operations, logistics, the creative production, those types of parts where we were in that, now we can go talk to people and build relationships and pitch our product. And that's really where the momentum comes. And so the best thing we can do is remove ourselves from those operational pieces so that, like you and I, who knows what may come out of this relationship, out of this conversation and this coffee meeting or whatever the case is. So do you agree with that? That is that next place for the business owner to go is to start building those relationships?
Well, I mean, you know, right now we have a client event this weekend. So I have my AV team setting up. I've got my admin team getting, you know, all the handouts and pieces and, you know, they're getting everything organized. So all I need to do is show up and, you know, I can be in my best place so that I can teach. And you and I are having this interview now and we're building relationships and getting to know one another. That to me is what is going to open the doors the fastest. It's not what you know or how you get there. It's who you know. And, you know, there's a great story of Onassis, who is the shipping magnate, and Jackie O's second husband. And he, someone had asked him, if you lost all your money, what would you do? And he said, well, I would get three jobs. I would make $500. And then I would take that $500 and I would spend it on one meal. Right? He said, because I know the person at that table for that $500. And a long time ago, $500 was even a lot more like $1 million. You know, the people that are going to be at that table are the ones that are going to open the door for you. And that will fast track probably 10 years of you just trudging along, working super hard. There's that one person that can, you know, really help you soar.
Absolutely. So just again, the importance of building the team to leverage time, get your time back, and then that next phase being more relationships. All right. So SCAL, what is L?
L's leadership. And that is, you know, that's us working on our stuff. And you know, some people definitely are born with leadership qualities, which is great. You know, you're kind of a stand-up person. You take responsibility. But there are so many more things to leadership that we need to learn. And if you want to grow your business, let's say by 40%, which is a pretty good growth, then you if you think of it as this entity that you're carrying and it's growing by 40%, well, to be able to carry that, you as an individual need to grow at least 60% to be able to carry that 40%. So what are you doing to work on yourself so that you don't lose it in front of your employees when they make a mistake or they're trying to share something with you and you're getting defensive? Or you're, you know, on your cell phone typing away and you're not really listening to them, or you're bringing your baggage to the table. I mean, look, we all have stuff going on in our lives. It's really how you show up and how you work to elevate the energy of your team on a daily basis, whether you're there or not.
Yeah. And the mood that you bring, the attitude you bring, the confidence you bring, really defines or sets the tone, the ceiling or the plateau for where they're going to be. Because what we didn't realize as leaders is anybody that works for us, they're pulling from our energy. So they're not ever going to be able, I mean, never say never, but rarely are they going to be able to have a better energy or a better mood or be more inspired or be more rah, rah, rah than the leader owner themselves. And so we're going to be the ones that are going to set that. So if we're bringing, unless we're bringing our A game and our A attitude and our A mood and our A, hey, no matter what, even holy cow, that was a cluster, you know, F up, but no big deal. We're going to pivot and we're going to do this. Then the team can actually rally and be excited about that. But I see so many times that business is slower or there's a big mistake or problem or unexpected situation. So the owner or leader themselves is so low or upset, but they expect the team to be more than that.
Yeah. And, you know, you're going to set the whole tone of the company. It really does create a vibration of energy for your whole culture. So you want to create a culture of, you know, positivity and inspiration and excitement and fun and whatever it is that's important to you. And then those leaders on your team, they're going to represent that energy so that it continues whether you're there or not. Even if you stepped away for a month or longer, if you really set the tone at the get-go, and that's really what the foundation of the company is built on, that kind of energy, that will, you know, be, that will, you know, spread throughout the entire company and continue to live on and grow.
And that's great. What you just said there as well is that as a leader, you want to create leaders and those that want to lead and inspire and bring forth the vision of, to those that are work for them or part of their team or project. So such an important piece. Do you see any consistent mistakes that, that business owners make when it comes to leadership?
Sure. And I've made all of them myself. So, you know, we learn and then afterwards you're like, why did I do that? Kind of like with our children too. You know, you lay awake at night, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Why did I do that? And it's one of those things that we just really have to practice. It's hard, you know, when something you worked hard at something and someone on your team screws up, you know, to say, oh, that's okay, you know. But you, what you find is that if you lose your cool and you go off, I mean, it doesn't fix the situation and it makes it way worse. And so I'd say work on your emotional stuff, find an outlet, take care of yourself. A lot of self-care is so crucial for business owners. We really suck at it. And it needs to be a priority for you so you are more balanced, you know. Lose it at home a little bit, or whatever you need to do, and then come in and say, okay, you know, that happened. What are we going to do about it? Let's get into solution mode. And also to your team, okay, so what do you think you would have done differently next time? And so that they can make this a real learning experience, because those mistakes are really are valuable. That's how we learn. And you've got to give them the room to do that. The other thing is when your team comes in or someone on your team, give them undivided attention, you know, or even a client or whoever it is you're talking to, and they feel it. They feel appreciated. They feel validated. And when you give people that time and you look at them in the eye and you're 100% present in a world of distraction, people feel that elevation and they're going to want to give back.
That's so good. All right. So then the last one is execution. You mentioned that one already, but tell us a little bit about execution and where, again, where the lack of, or maybe not enough of, or where are the breakdowns when it comes to execution that keeps people from growth?
So you want to go back to that big picture vision that you started in the beginning. And you say, okay, that's the end goal. This is where we want to be in, let's say, 3 to 5 years. Get clear on what that looks like and then reverse engineer it. And I have a two-step process. You have to figure out what are the projects that have to be accomplished to reach that big picture vision. Those I call your mile steps. And then you break the mile steps into each of those projects into baby steps, which I call mini feats. And so for, let's say, one project could have 50 mini feats, right? And so you create a timeline to determine, you know, how long that's going to take. And one of the things you need to be clear on is only doing like one or two projects a quarter. I made the mistake so many times because, you know, I can do a lot. I can do a lot in a short period of time. Not everybody operates that way and they get overwhelmed. And then things are not done well and you don't really get many results. Or you feel like, oh, I'm missing out. You know, we got to do this other thing now. No, you don't. You can do it, but not all at the same time. So just get clear on that vision, break down the steps, and then say, okay, what's the most important project we need to do now as a team? And then, you know, who's in charge of what? And what are the timelines? What are the deadlines? And who's going to hold who accountable to make sure that it's done?
Yeah. And along with that, what I find myself, the trap I find myself in quite often is, I want to execute too many things. And so I get very, we're on track and then a great idea or a new relationship or a new affiliation. And then I pull my team off of this in order to go over here. And then, and just too many plates in the air because I'm so excited and I want to do everything. And I want to do everything right now. And there's all these big opportunities. And do you have any advice on, I mean, it seems simple to just stay focused on the strategic plan and these different things. But most of us as entrepreneurs and business owners, I mean, we're opportunists. We we get really excited. And I'm always the one thinking, oh, that'll be easy. That will just take a little bit of extra time. So that should be really simple to include in our, you know, the rest of the project plans that are going on. And then everything takes so much longer and more time, right? More resources than I think it's going to take. And so ultimately it just pulls us off focus. And I'm just so guilty of that.
Yeah. And, you know, I say business owners have EADD, which is entrepreneurial ADD. And yeah, you're the creative and, you know, you get bored easily. That's the typical. But I had an employee say to me one time, Allison, you're like a red Ferrari and you're driving so fast and we are running so hard to keep up with you. Mm. And I just thought, wow, that is not good. As much as we all would like to drive a red Ferrari or whatever, but you know, on your team, if they can't keep up with you, then, you know, they're miserable. They're going to make a ton of mistakes and, you know, you're going to be all over the place and you're going to be living in your company in complete chaos. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. People feel like that they can never live up to your expectations. And so, yeah, it definitely takes discipline. But I'll tell you what, when you make that shift and you say, I'm just going to do one or two things right now, all of a sudden you have peace in your life and you feel more grounded. You have more space to be creative on the projects that you are working on and everybody's happier and you make more money. When you can take that one thing and just really dive deep with it, stay with it. Stay the course. You know, it's amazing what happens with the, you know, it just blossoms. If you're zigzagging all over the place, nothing really gets a chance to grow and thrive and scale.
Yeah, I so agree with that. And again, that's my biggest place of growth is just one or two things at a time. Quit, stop trying to do everything. But all right, so I love this. So scale or fail. Now, to sum all that up in a way, do you believe that businesses need to be growing or they're dying? Meaning there always needs to be that, Lex, is there anything such thing as a status quo when it just more or less stays where it is and everybody's happy? And, or are we always working on these five parts of the business because constant growth is necessary in order for longevity?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just bringing in revenue, it's profits too. So I think that, you know, sometimes growth can mean, you know, we're going to take this year and really systemize our company. And I watched a video with the founder of Samuel Adams some years ago, the beer maker. And he said that they took 6 years at one, they got to a certain level of revenue and they took 6 years and systemized their whole company. 6 years, the patience with that. Can you imagine? And then they just scaled like crazy. And so sometimes growth is not just revenue growth. It's also taking the time and really building out the team and so forth. Now, obviously, you have to keep bringing in cash flow, but it doesn't have to be this year on growth. You can grow too quickly. And if you grow too quickly and you don't have that foundation, your house is going to topple over. So that's really important to have that sustainable growth. But you do have to be constantly thinking of, you know, how do we scale? How do we multiply? Because, you know, the economies go up and down. Industries are getting disrupted all the time. And so, you know, just kind of resting on your laurels and say, ah, we're good. I'm just going to be status quo. And then all of a sudden, you know, this AI thing has come around and you weren't paying attention and you didn't stay nimble enough and nobody wants what you're doing anymore.
That's, again, so well said. And you're right that growth, the automatic thought when comes growth means growing revenue. And you're right. Sometimes revenue can stay the same, but you can grow profit by systematizing, looking at your margins, maybe lowering some expenses, renegotiating contracts, any number of things that what a great thing to do is just increase profit margin without really putting any more work into, to, you know, the game, at least at that point. So That's a really important piece. Now, the follow-up to that is I'm in the money business, of course, so I love talking about the money. When it comes to business financials, what do you see most often that, I mean, I know you're a business coach, a CEO coach, you work with 7, 8, 9-figure, 10-figure companies for that, and you really do coach and work with those owners. So at all these different levels, do you see again many times a consistency when it comes to business financials and how that impedes either their growth or just their overall strength as a company?
Definitely. You know, in the early days, a lot of business owners don't even look at their numbers or they've come to me and they've been in business 10 years and they hardly look at their numbers except when they do their taxes and don't know where they're at. They need to be looking at, you know, cash flow statements, profit and loss, balance sheets on a weekly basis. And the reason is that helps them to make strategic decisions. I think the numbers, the metrics, the data tells a story. And it helps you to determine how much you can invest in your marketing, your lifetime value of your client. I mean, you might think, oh, I did a webinar, or, you know, whatever it is, I did a sale at my retail store and I made this X amount of money. But if you're looking at the lifetime value and your customer on average stays 3 years and refers 5 people, you know, you've just brought in, you know, a client worth several thousand dollars, but you're looking short-sighted that, oh, they only spent $500. So it's crucial to stay on top of it. And like you were talking about earlier, to make sure your burn rate is, you know, you're able to handle that. And also the other piece to that is how you're setting up your corporation as well, because you may have set it up, for instance, as an S corp in the, you know, earlier days, or even an LLC. And then you're like, you need a C corp. You didn't get advisement on that, and you lose a lot of money as you grow. I mean, there's a lot of creative things that you can do. I'm not a CPA or an accountant, but you know, you want to be thinking, planning ahead for those.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Allison, we're coming up upon our time, the end of our time together here. That went by so fast. Do you have any concluding comments in any of that? That, you know, any advice that you'd like to give business owners out there that, like I said, maybe hit a wall, feeling a little bit stuck?
Yeah, I mean, there is life over the wall, and you don't have to operate that way. I know you might feel burned out and exhausted, and like, you know, maybe you've lost your passion. That happens sometimes. But it really just needs to be an adjustment in the way that you're working in your company. And so that's really what I help people do, in my book and in the mentoring we do. And I have a saying that I've said for years that kind of sums it all up. And that is, make decisions from where you're going, not from where you're at.
That's so good. Make decisions from where you're going, not from where you're at. That's good. That's so true too. Just, it seems so simple, but we get stuck where we are, and then everything's from almost a fear or a burnout or just a struggle point of view versus no, let's project out. And what does it look like, feel like, and who's there and what's there, and then bring it backwards.
Exactly. It's like, pretend that you're already reaching that big picture vision. You're there. What kind of decisions would you make from that place?
That's so good.
That's how the big leaps happen. If you're making them from where you're at, you're seeing, you know, you're just seeing your current situation. Of course, you're not going to take the leaps, you know? So you need to be like, pretending really, kind of playing games with your brain. Oh, I'm there already. Let's, you know, make that, claim that stake in your industry. We're a leader. I mean, just act as if you're there already, and then the game changes.
Great. Well, one final question that I'd like to ask all my guests to do a little bit myth busting. So when it comes to business growth, business success, is there a myth that you'd like to bust? Do you see a belief that is pretty prominent, but you want to call it out?
Yeah, I think that business owners commiserate together. Oh, I can't find help. And oh, it's so hard kind of thing. You know, why people like to watch soap operas and things like that. It makes them feel better in their pain. But that's not the dance that I like to do. I think there's amazing people out there. They just need patience and they need to be trained well.
I like that one a lot. All right. Well, you have a new book coming out, so please share that with us. I can't wait to get my copy. And I know I'm going to learn so many things about growth and scaling, especially where I am with my business, my newest business right now. So would you share that with all of us?
Yeah. Well, I just got my copy in the mail.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Probably showing up backwards there, but it feels like real. I'm so excited. And I have some gifts that I want to share with your viewers and your audience as well that go with the book. So the book is Scale or Fail, but if you go to scaleorfail.com/wisegift, I'm going to give you 17 scale strategies. There's a download and a video training so that you can start setting up your company to scale. And then if you want to get a copy of the book or several copies for your friends, go to scaleorfail.com/wisebook and you'll get all kinds of great gifts with the book, like a quick start guide and a webinar training and all that good.
Well, all right. Well, right after we hang up, I'm going to go to scaleorfail.com/wisebook. Yay. Thank you for doing that. That's so wonderful. All right. Well, you've been amazing. Thank you for sharing your time. I know you've got 10,000 things going on and we tried to squeeze this in. So I appreciate you. I appreciate your time and congrats on your book.
Thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. You're an amazing host. I love the questions. This has been awesome.
Thank you, Allison.
And so ends another episode of the Wealthy, Wealthy Life podcast, where Christina brings you unconventional, cutting-edge strategies from leading experts to optimize your wealth and your health. As a token of gratitude for listening, go to podcast.fallingformoney.com and download a free copy of her best-selling book, Falling for Money. If you're ready to change your relationship with money, head on over to podcast.fallingformoney.com and download your free copy today.